After years on the road, Toomey parked the van and picked up the mic to bring you this podcast that features interviews with people from hardcore to hair metal. This is Talk Toomey with your host, Joshua Toomey.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into Talk Toomey. This is episode 191, and this is an interview with Monty Pittman, John Deddy, and Eli Santana, all playing for Monty Pittman. He was out on tour with Sebastian Bach. They rolled through town, and I got to sit down with the guys and have a nice long chat with all three of them. You guys know Monty Pittman from Prong, his solo stuff, and he also plays guitar for Madonna for like the last 20 years, so that's insane in and of itself. John Deddy's played with Slayer, Testament, Anthrax, and then Eli Santana has played with Huntress, Holy Grail. He's also been in like TV and movies. He's all over the place, and it was fantastic to sit down with the three of those guys and talk it up. Interview with those guys. And before we get into all that, I just want to say, hopefully you guys had a very Merry Christmas, a very Happy New Year. And this is the first episode of 2019 for Talk Toomey. I did not do a best of episode because I just spent time with my family over the last couple of weeks and had a good time. So I didn't want to get away from the family too much to sit down and edit a best of. You know what the best of 2018 was? Every single episode. So go back, check them out, and that'll be your best of 2018. Hopefully you guys enjoyed all of the episodes, and hopefully you guys enjoy what I am doing this year on Talk Toomey. You guys know that the Talk Toomey podcast is brought to you by Good Company with Bowling. Yes, our good friend Scott Bowling down in Atlanta, Georgia. Make sure you are checking out his show. Looks like he wrapped up another interview with Clint Lowry of Seven Dust. That should be out soon. And latest episodes with Eddie Trunk, Jose Mangan, members of Korn, Seven Dust, Stuck Mojo, Fozzy, and so much more. And then if you also heard him recently, he hosted Talk is Jericho. So huge thank you to Scott Bowling of Good Company with Bowling for sponsoring the episodes and getting them out to you each and every week. Let him know that the Talk to Me podcast sent you when you head over to YouTube or scottgoodcompany.com to check out some of his well-done interviews. And also, if you want to support the podcast monetarily, make sure you are heading over to patreon.com/talktoomey, choosing a tier, supporting the show, and helping me get through another month of all of these podcast hosting bills. So please, help out the podcast any way you can. Rate, review, share, Patreon, and head over to Good Company with Bowling and let them know that the Talk to Me podcast sent you. There were a lot of great things that did happen on the podcast last year. A lot of great interviews and a lot of great guests. We did have a ton of fun in 2018, and I do kind of want to start off a kind of a somber note on this episode, but kind of go back and have a little memoriam for people we lost in 2018, and that will lead us up to our first song. In 2018, we lost so many great musicians. Fast Eddie Clark of Fastway and Motorhead, Dave Holland, formerly of Judas Priest, Damian Percy of Mortification, Matt Torpe of Mr. Big, Caleb Schofield of Cave-In, Ben Graves of The Murder Dolls and Dope, Ralph Santola of Deicide Death, Obituary, and more. Can't ever forget Jason Luttrell of Primer 55, my former singer, Kyle Pavone of We Came as Romans, Ollie Herbert of All That Remains, Lucas Starr of O Sleeper, the great Vinnie Paul of Pantera and Damage Plan. And what kind of takes us into our first song of the episode is Jill Janis of Huntress. Eli Santana played guitar in Huntress for a while and played on their last album, did the last shows with Jill, and unfortunately she came, you know, she's no longer with us, so let's, in honor of Jill, in honor of Eli being on the podcast, let's check out some Huntress. Let's talk to all three of the guys, Monty Pittman, John Deddy, and Eli Santana, from their stop here in Louisville, Kentucky. Let's check out some Monty Pittman solo. Let's check out some live Testament with John Deddy on drums, and then I will talk to you guys momentarily.
Keep you off my fading mind.
All right, guys, we're sitting here with Monty Pittman, John Didi, and our good friend Eli over here from the on the base. And
it's Denny.
What did I say?
We were joking when we said Didi. We were joking, but it's John.
Perfect.
Denny.
Well, I heard. I thought I said it right.
You should even say things
mother
like that.
Mother. Well, see, it is fun, right? We have a lot of fun
right
here. John Didi. Yeah. Like Eddie or like Betty. My grandma Betty.
So. Like you, Betty.
Well, cool, man. What's up, man? How you doing?
Good, man. Are you here in Louisville, Kentucky? So, did I say that correctly?
No.
Oh.
Louisville.
It's like one giant, like, Louisville.
Well, that's the same thing. You got to be from here to say it like that.
Yeah, I'm technically not from here, but you can definitely, you can tell who's not from here when they say Louisville, which I like that one the best. I think Louisville, the way it sounds, the best. Jesus.
It's Louisville.
It's Louis. Yeah.
Technically.
Well, the city was named after.
Can't say it correctly.
The city was named after King Lull. So.
All right.
That's a joke.
Oh,
yes.
See,
more name jokes.
We don't get much sleep on this tour, so you can easily.
Well, I don't see how you can't get all the sleep on this nice palatial bus you have here.
Yeah, it's John keeps it clean all the time.
Whether they like it or not.
Yeah, we're having a great time though. It's a lot of laughs, great shows, amazing response from the crowd, and Sebastian's awesome. We love touring with him. Never a dull moment. He's been very supportive and really helpful.
Well, this is your first tour as a solo artist, correct? Like
your
first national tour. So, I mean, how has that been for you going out every night and actually playing for the people?
Well, for all the, I've got 6 albums out, but to everybody I'm playing in front of them, and they've never heard of me before.
Right.
It's being like a new artist.
And the, obviously your day job is Madonna.
Right.
And you know, what is it like for you to kind of go from that, you know, the monstrosity of a Madonna tour to, you know, playing clubs again?
I look at it all as being the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love playing. I love doing it all. So, you know, that's my passion.
Mm-hmm.
I love playing clubs. I love playing little small bars. I love playing, you know, the bigger size places that you play with Madonna.
Yeah.
So the way it's different is, well, it kind of balances out. With Madonna, everybody's just there to see her. So you're basically invisible sometimes, or you could be. But for this, you know, all the pressure is on me, singing, playing guitar, you know, taking care of everybody. Lucky to have an amazing band with me and great
absolutely.
Crew.
The Madonna fans out there, have they come out to see you at all in this? Have anybody popped up? Nothing at all. Where are they at?
You know? No, I don't know. Where are they?
Well, you never know. I mean, you might get a stray one here or there to come and see you. Maybe a huge Madonna fan.
Yeah. You know, one thing that's been weird is even a lot of people that I, everybody who's been at these shows are people that I don't know.
Right.
It's all just new fans.
Okay.
Fans. Or, you know, it's Sebastian's crowd. It's Sebastian's fans.
Mm-hmm.
But then playing in front of them. And everybody has been just, you know, really, really happy with what's happening.
Well, taking the deep dive into your backstory, you know, it's the musician's, like, American dream. You know, you're like, I'm going to go to L.A. to make it, and you're in Prong within, like, a month. That doesn't happen. You know, what do you think made that happen for you?
You know, persistence,
mm-hmm.
and you know, just not giving up, not listening to anybody else, and you know, when I first joined Prong, there was a lot of people saying, "Why would you want to play in that band? This, you know, the '90s are over with, and nobody cares about metal anymore." That's what people always say over the years, and but you know, just the learning experience I had with Prong, that alone, was like going to, you know, Prong school. It's something I just look back on. You don't really notice it. Everything's moving too fast when it actually happens. And you can't look back. You know, I never look back. I just keep looking forward. You know, look at every situation like it's a new situation.
I had heard you say that when you moved to LA, you had left a band behind back in Texas. How hard was that for you to do, to leave, you know, the dudes you kind of grew up playing with?
It was very difficult to leave, and it was scary because it was just, stepping out on a ledge. But it was also, it felt like it was time also. So,
did any of them, like, want to go with you, or why didn't any of them go with you?
They were all, you know, happy with whether they didn't want to, They weren't interested.
Yeah. Well, you hear stories of, like, Jason Newsted, you know, when he was in Flotsam and Jetsam auditioning for Metallica, then going back to the practice space, and they found out, and they, you know, gave him a whole bunch of shit. Was the was there any animosity between them for you wanting to leave to go to L.A.? Was there any of that stuff?
It was at first, yeah. but that's all, you know. That, you know, that's just a blip on the radar looking back now.
Well, yeah, but at the time, I'm sure it was.
Everybody was angry at me for leaving Longview. They're all, you know, there was a lot of people who said, "You're going to be back in a month. You can't make it there."
Not only were you not back in a month, you were already in a.
I'm still not back. Right? I'm still gone. It's been 19 years now.
Wow.
But now we just laugh at it all, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's like. You know, people that I played with back in the day, and, you know, he had, like, some sort of, like, band beef with someone else. You look back, and you see him now, and you're, like, best friends, and it almost makes you stronger.
Bands fight. We're all going to start fighting here in the next couple of days. So that's just part of it.
Let's pass it over to John real quick.
Pass the mic.
Well, the thing with you, John, is you know, your name kind of popped back up with the, you know, filling in for Anthrax and stuff. Your history, you know, where did you start playing, and when, like, what got you into playing metal?
Well, wow, that could be a really long answer right there.
We can do whatever.
No, well, it's interesting because I started playing drums on my 14th birthday, and my parents were divorced. I asked for a drum set I knew I wanted to play drums, mm-hmm. so I asked them both for a drum kit, and I figured I'd get at least one out of the deal, and I wound up getting a drum set from both of them.
Nice.
So, and then that same birthday, my brother... This was in 1984. My brother got me, he's like, "You got to check out this new record that just came out. It's this band called Anthrax." And it had this picture of this fist coming out of this guy's mouth, Fistful of Metal. I'm like, "Wow, that looks kind of cool." And so the same day that I got these drum sets, I also got the Anthrax Fistful of Metal record mm-hmm. and played it, obviously. And that was what immediately set me on my path for metal. So, ever since then, I've been a metal guy. That's all I've discovered. That's all I want to play. You know, I enjoy listening to other types of music, yeah. but as far as playing and performing music, you know, I like that box, and I'm fine with that box, you know. But those are the bands that I grew up with. I started with Anthrax. First song I ever played on drums was Metal Thrashing Mad. And then, you know, discovered Metallica shortly after that, and then Slayer shortly after that. And those three bands in particular were my staple for learning to play drums, because I predominantly self-taught myself for the first 5 years. So I would learn records, and those were the three bands that I would learn records from, you know. So just kind of weird how things went the way they did for me, you know. It's kind of a dream come true.
So when you got the two drum kits, did you put them together to make one giant drum kit with two, you know, double bass and
immediately,
things like that?
Immediately. I had a five-piece Sparkle Red CB700 and it was a three-piece jazz set. It was Reuther by Pearl. So one was Sparkle Red, one was Sparkle Blue. So I had them together, and yeah, so I immediately had a double bass set, and then I think I got some shelving paper later on, and I wrapped nice. It all in, like, white shelving paper or something. So it all looked like one, you know, one colored kit, not a jelly bean. So, people will ask me about my feet and, mm-hmm. you know, how do you get your feet to go like that? And, well, I started from day one with 2 feet, you know, double bass. So I developed a lot of bad habits in those years too, you know, that I had to go back and recorrect, you know, with hi-hat work and stuff like that. But from day one, I've started laying that foundation of metal drumming and, you know, even more specifically, like the old school, like where you actually hit and not rely on technology and triggers and all that stuff. So, you know, not that there's anything against that, but that's just not my style.
I was actually, when I was kind of doing a little Google research on you today, one of the best quotes I saw online was, "Who the shit is John Teddy?" And it was funny because it's, you know, you popped up in the 90s and then you kind of popped back up, you know, a few, many years later. So, I mean, what were you kind of doing in between those years? Were you continuing to play? Were you raising a family? Or what were you doing?
In the 90s, I joined Testament in 1994, and I replaced John Tempesta, and then did that for I was with Testament for about a year, then went into Slayer, joined Slayer in late 95, which replacing Paul Bostaff at that time, and then was with Slayer until early 97, and then went back into Testament again, and it wound up being, you know, I joined those bands all as a full member back then. It's a little more difficult, you know, because all we had were magazines. We didn't have the internet and all that when that was going on. So a lot of people think that either I was a fill-in guy or a temp guy. And, you know, they don't ask fill-in guys to do music videos and photo shoots and all that. I did that for a while. And, I had some personal, you know, family-type stuff going on back home. And, and I just decided to, you know, I was kind of burned out from the road, and it was a lot of touring. It was a great experience with the touring and whatnot. But I decided to take some time off and just chill out. And so I stepped away from the industry for, 12 years.
Wow.
You know, and then I was getting that bug again and decided to, you know, put my toe back in the water, so to speak. And then it just kind of led to some, you know, some small projects and then ultimately larger projects. And then Anthrax called in, I want to say it was 2012. And I've been working for Charlie now, ever since then. And I'll be heading out with them again next month, doing some dates in Europe on the Slayer run. I needed that time off to kind of just get my bearings straight. And I think, you know, as musicians, I think everybody does. I would think that they do. And, just to get some balance and see, you know, where you want to focus or is this something you really want to do? I'm happy that I took that time off. I have no regrets about it. And even more, I feel more privileged that I was able to just basically come back into it and, you know, and just even be almost right back where I was almost to a degree, you know.
Now when you say you work for Charlie, are you teching for him too? Are you?
No.
Okay.
No.
Are you just filling in on his days off when he takes his sabbaticals from Anthrax?
So it's well documented. People can see on the internet. Charlie has been battling carpal tunnel syndrome for a number of years, had surgery for it. Unfortunately, the surgery for that is kind of a one-shot deal. So either it's going to work or it's not. And, he got the surgery, but his hand still does bother him. So he has to kind of pace himself and on the amount of touring that he can do, because otherwise he can really damage that. So the way it's worked with us is, generally, he'll do half a tour, then I'll come in and do the other half, or I'll start the tour and then he'll finish out. It just really depends on the scheduling and what the tour is going to be. I was proud of him though on this last Slayer summer run that they all did. You know, he only missed four shows,
right?
And so he had Gene Hoagland has filled in with Anthrax before, and you know he was out with Testament, so it was super easy for him to just step in and do those few shows. So, proud of Charlie for trying to make that happen. He's really got to watch it with the hand and hopefully people understand that. And when I'm out there filling in, I'm giving it 110% every night and hopefully, you know, the people that are there to see the shows and see me perform with Anthrax, hopefully they're not leaving disappointed. You know, everybody seems to be enjoying it. So,
yeah, Gene Hoagland's actually been on this show, I think, three times. He's a show favorite. And then one thing with Gene, I think I talked to him about coming into a situation like Anthrax and trying to, you know, where you may be learning from the record, but you guys know as musicians, you know, sometimes the live version is a little bit different. We might do the bridge eight times instead of four or things like that. I mean, are you well aware of all that stuff and, like, trying to...
Well, the one thing I've learned with Anthrax is that you'll never get two more bridges in a verse. You'll get two less.
Right. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You don't want to be continue playing
the solos going eight bars. No, it's gonna go a little less now. I mean, there's things that they've worked out for a live situation, mm-hmm. and being a fan of the band for as I said, I mean, from day one playing drums. All of their staple songs, especially with Joey singing, you know, those first four or five albums are just burned into my brain, you know, which it's really cool for me because if they call out a song that they want to play, I really, it's just some simple brushing up on because it's so burned in my head from playing those songs. You know, it's the same with Slayer. God, it'd be the same like with Metallica even, you know, I mean, I could, the first five albums, I could pull a song out like pretty much and probably get a good solid first pass on it. But, it really is down to, a finely greased machine with them. Mm-hmm. We don't even rehearse. I just show up to the first gig and we just jump on stage. Oof. And it was, I guess it's a compliment really. I mean, you know, they had never really met me before and I just showed up to the first show and we didn't even, you know, we jammed a little for sound check, but there was no, you know, day or two in a rehearsal room anywhere. It was just get on stage and go.
Right.
So, it was a little nerve wracking that first show, but, it all works out.
It's funny. That whole Slayer testament, you know, Paul Bostoff, Dave Lombardo, yourself, you know, even Gene Hoglan being in that mix too. Like this kind of that round and round, like musical chairs of drummers that they had. Like all those Bay Area bands seem to just like, you know, switch out drummers all their entire careers.
Well, you know, everybody knows everybody, mm-hmm. that saying, and it's certainly true in the metal community. I think in the metal community, it's really a close-knit group of people. And yeah, I mean, you're going to have people that they know know that person's skills and talent and you know, and also them as on a personality level as well. So I think there's a comfortability with that, you know, knowing like, hey, he's available and we know who he is, as opposed to bringing in somebody that, you know, might be really, really good, but we don't, you know, how's that person going to be on tour? Because it's not just about playing music, right? It's about... I mean, we're sitting on a bus, and Monty will tell you about me cleaning up the bus. And, you know, everybody's got to clean up their trash.
Got to start handing out checklists before you can get off in the morning.
On the floor.
Right. You're just a bunch of dudes on a bus. It happens.
Can't have anything out, or John will come and move it.
Well, let's not get carried away now, buddy.
Let's get to know Eli a little bit.
Yeah.
Pass the mic here.
Yeah. What's going on?
What's up, man? So, what was the list of bands that they listed off that you're from earlier?
I play in this band called Holy Grail from L.A., Pasadena.
Nice.
And then I play in another band, or I guess I did play in Huntress.
Condolences.
From also Pasadena. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of the same thing you were talking about earlier, where it was, you know, they needed a drummer and another guitar player, and they just called me right up, and it wasn't like... vetting process. It was just like, here's the songs. You want to play this tour?
Well, I mean, that's the thing with getting yourself out there, being able to play certain things and people having the trust in you to be able to call you up and say, hey, you know, we have a tour in 5 days. Can you do this? You know, it's not, it's never, you have 6 months to learn the stuff and everything else. Most of the times it's definitely a last minute decision where, hey, our bass player can't do it. Can you do this? Can you learn these real quick and get out there?
Which was exactly how this kind of went down with Monty.
Yeah.
On top of that, like I'm a guitar player. So I'm coming out as that, not, but yeah, it's been, cause I've actually played, one thing on bass with Monty before.
Yeah.
Of course we didn't, two of those songs we didn't play, but, it was fun to learn and Woodshed.
Yeah.
Cause it isn't stuff you can just kind of, you know, watch me for the changes kind of thing. You have to actually pay attention. Which I like cause it's intricate and, mm-hmm. But also it's not like it's math core or something,
right?
Where like people are like, what is happening? You know, it's still like got a groove to it and everything. So
yeah, and on the sixth time we do this, we actually go to a B yeah. instead of an A. So, you know, so you're trying to learn the riffs and
yeah,
and,
exactly.
Yeah, it's not necessarily just, you know, this song goes A G E.
Right.
It's a you know the riff-tastic yeah. all over the place.
And then we go to 17/16 just right. cause
just
on
cause,
that part.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, that's always the best. The just cause.
Yeah.
Keep the ladies away.
Right.
Yeah.
If there are any girls in the venue, they will not buy your t-shirt.
The more numbers you have in the time signature, the less numbers you'll get after the show.
I like that. I think that's actually simple math too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What was the name of that song? Sausage Fest.
Yeah. Yeah. The Sausage Fest tour. I'm sure this tour has not been a sausage fest though. I'm sure that's been a.
No, it has not. I'm not used to
woodwork.
That. Coming from the you know thrash world.
Yeah.
Which it's getting better.
Yeah.
I must admit. None of those girls existed when I was in high school, but, you know, they're coming around. But for this tour, some cougars.
Some cougars. Yeah, right, the cougars coming
yeah.
out. The 80s ladies coming out of nowhere.
Yeah, it's
hello,
it's,
Denver.
Yeah, easy. But it is not, they're into it, actually. They
yeah.
show up early because they're punctual. And they're digging the set, and yeah, like a lot of them haven't heard anything
mm-hmm.
from Monty, so it's like it's really cool to see them like immediately into it and digging the tunes because it is melodic and catchy. So not that they okay they probably can't handle the odd time. So
right,
yeah,
they're bobbing their head, and all of a sudden it's just all over the place.
Yeah,
yeah, and then the short circuiting and things like that.
Yeah, like I had a when I was in high school, I went on this date with this girl, which I wasn't that into her, but I was like, oh, I'll be nice. And this poor girl, I'd put on, like, I think Human by Death.
Nice.
And she's trying to bob her head, and she was trying so hard, but it was just, you know, the meter's all over the place, and yeah.
Here, honey, I would like to show you Dillinger Escape Plan.
Yeah, yeah, here's Calculating to Infinity,
right, exactly.
You know, and then she's trying to bob her head. I'm like, oh, man, she must really like me.
Well, cool. And the other thing, and you know, with Monty playing and Madonna and things like that, I mean, I love talking to dudes that are kind of in the metal world but also do other things. And you know, they brought up that you were in Westworld. How did that come about? And and you know, obviously the hit HBO series Westworld.
Yeah, I both Holy Grail and Huntress were home for a while, and mm-hmm. I started doing some like extra work, like literally extra work for money, background work, and then this dude just called me because he's like, you know, you're Native American looking dude with long hair who's willing to take his shirt off. So, and I went and I showed up one time and they just kept calling me back and recurring. And then, And then, I've been kind of getting into more of that side of it and working a lot with that. I actually got to work with Anthony Hopkins.
Oh, wow.
And he was just the coolest dude, and then also getting to see him work and rehearse up close was like pretty amazing. Because I'm pretty sure he hadn't read the script before he showed up, and I was like, "How are we gonna film this?" And he's working through it, and then by the end of it, didn't drop a word. It was just like basically the performance you see, one taking it over and over again and trying different things. And I was just like, "It's a pretty cool, I guess, art form." And so I decided to kind of dig more into that. So, so if you don't blink on season two, you can see me all painted up in a loincloth and going into the valley beyond.
There you go. Well, cool. I'm gonna a couple more for Monty,
yeah,
and we'll wrap this one up, man. But we'll get into the new albums in a second. One story I've heard, and obviously with my fresh Cowboys from Hell tattoo, I need to know the story behind Madonna rocking A New Level at the show.
How much time do we have?
We have all the time
okay,
in the world.
Okay, all right. So we were getting ready for the Sticky and Sweet tour that was in 2008, and I was giving her some guitar lessons, you know. I've been teaching her. That's how I started playing guitar for.
Yeah.
I started teaching her. So I was giving her some things to kind of work on her right hand, like right hand picking exercises, and I showed her A New Level because we were going to do her song Hung Up, where she was going to play in drop D so she could just hold down one finger.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And even though a new level isn't like that, you could, of course, still play, you know, just play the notes, because that's tuned down a whole step for the purists out there. Go, wait, that's not right. But, and so I showed it to her, and then she just kept playing it. And we would be in rehearsal, and the way we do the tour is we'll start with the first song, and we keep adding as we go along. So by the end of rehearsals, which we rehearse for 3 to 4 months usually, and so towards the, you know, so we're at the end of the set and we played Hung Up, and at the end she would just start playing that riff, and then everybody else would start playing with her, and the rest of the band didn't know what that was. Mm-hmm. They just thought that she was playing a riff,
like she wrote a song.
So, and it was, so, you know, it was kind of cool that way. It was where they were just treating it like a piece of music, and for me it was just cool to play part of a Pantera song,
right,
with Madonna. And what I always say what's really funny is, then, you know, because no one can be in there when we're rehearsing, it's closed, but all of a sudden the tour manager comes in with some papers, and somebody comes in and puts water in the refrigerator at that point, and all these people just kept coming in, and they just wanted to see that because the word was getting out, like, you know, Madonna's playing part of a Pantera song, how crazy is that? And it stuck, and we did that on tour.
So insane. I remember when I started seeing the video pop up online, and you're like, at first I thought it was fake because it didn't look right. And then I'm like, why would she be playing a Pantera song? But now I know the man behind the story.
It fit with the show also, because the show was almost like the end of it sort of went like a game, mm-hmm. like with the dancers and all the themes, and so when you at the end you reach a new level, and then also she had just gotten a new band, so there was a lot of newness, so it fit in so many different ways.
So with your being able to, you know, getting into Prong, and then obviously getting into Madonna, you go to LA. Do you go to LA to join a band? Was that your thing? Would start a band, or was it to truly just be like a working musician?
A working musician to do whatever I could do. Either I would join a band, start a band, which was pretty much what I wanted to do, or pave the way where I could talk my band into moving out.
Right.
I mean, people still talk about that band to this day. We were just there playing in Dallas, and people were always like, "Oh, I'll play some My Remains songs," and is My Remains going to get up and play? You know, people would still talk about it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it would have been amazing if somebody like Brian Slagle could have heard us then. You know, we just didn't have any sort of means of getting our music out there. People in that area didn't, you know, it's a big country music. Mm-hmm. kind of area. So, and we were really heavy, but then we also did kind of like funk kind of stuff, which was, I don't think that's so uncommon in the 90s. You had a lot of kind of like
Faith No More or something.
I mean, that's an example. We weren't really like anything else,
right?
Some people would say we're like Pantera, and then some people would say we're like Rage Against the Machine, and some people would say we're like Fishbone.
Mm-hmm.
So we had all those sort of things, so you could open for these different band, like we opened for Machine Head, we opened for Corrosion of Conformity, we opened for Crowbar, we opened for Acid Bath, which was a lot of fun. We played their last shows with them, and but then we'd also play with like the Cottonmouth Kings and, you know, some things like that.
Yeah, it's funny, I think I have almost the same exact band in the 90s, you know, to where, you know, we were in Nashville, that's where I'm from. You know, every big band that came through, they were like, "Hey, you want to open for them?" So at one point, we had opened for Limp Bizkit, and we opened for like the reformed Misfits. You know, so it was
right.
You would have these just insane shows like that.
Yeah, I guess that was a more common thing than what you realize. You know, because I grew up in a small town, mm-hmm. or it used to be a small town, and so I to answer the question, I wanted to just work as a musician. So I moved to L.A. I worked at the Guitar Center in Hollywood because I figured I would meet the most musicians there.
Right.
And I worked with a girl who worked in... Well, she worked in drums, and her boyfriend was Ivan DePrume, who played in White Zombie.
Oh, right, yeah.
Ivan was jamming with Tommy Victor from Prong, and so Ivan introduced me and Tommy together. And Prong was my favorite band.
Yeah. Actually, one of my first shows I ever saw was... Prong Pantera 94, so it was one of my, I think that was my second show I ever saw, so yeah, Prong is great, love them.
Was that with Sepultura?
Max had just, I think, hurt himself or something, and it was, okay. So it was just Prong and Pantera.
Because Pantera opened for Prong. Prong had just put out Beg to Differ, mm-hmm. and so Pantera were opening with, it must have been right when Cowboys from Hell was going to come out
right.
or something like that. And Tommy Victor's told me stories about playing at Joe's Garage in mm-hmm. Fort Worth, like pre Beg to Differ, when they just had like Primitive Origins and Force Fed out, and this kid, this little skinny kid with all his hair, like front row, like banging his head, and that was Dimebag.
Yeah.
He used to always come to all That's the
awesome.
Shows.
Yeah, I love all those old Dimebag stories.
Yeah.
Me
too. See, they were the hometown heroes where
yeah.
I grew up.
Well, that's what I was saying. Yeah, you're
so
you're not
I would
too
hear about them.
Them
when I was a little kid from my cousins mm-hmm. who were older. And, you know, so in when they had, like, Project in the Jungle and yeah. I Am the Night,
right.
like, that era, like...
Metal Magic.
The local band at school.
Yeah, right. Man, that's too much.
Fun fact. You know, also weird, I found out that my older cousin went to school with Elliot Smith.
Okay.
Do you know who Elliot Smith
I know
was?
The name.
Well, he was an amazing acoustic guy, but he lived in Dallas for a while.
Okay.
He was in Duncanville.
Nice.
And fun fact for those Elliot Smith fans out there. And Post Malone is from Dallas, too.
Well, there you go.
Do you know about him?
How do you not? But
do you know he's a big metalhead?
Yeah, I've seen him. You know, he like rocks like Crowbar shirts, and he...
Yeah, he tried out for... So he tried... The story is, what I heard, was he tried out for Crown the Empire.
Okay.
And he broke a string in his audition, and so he didn't get the gig, so he started getting into rap.
That's so funny.
And then now he's the biggest thing since Nirvana.
Yeah, he has like...
he was pre-Malone.
Pre-Malone.
Imagine Crown the Empire, like, man, we could have got that guy
right.
and had him rap.
It's so funny,
it's like
man.
I wonder if they hit him up, like, hey, man, you ever need a drummer, you know, let me... Hit me up.
It's funny, the, you know the guy Diplo?
Yeah.
I went to high school with him.
He's done stuff with Madonna.
Yeah, I went to high school with him. And we used to hang around. He had a, like a VW bus in high school. And me and him would drive around in it. And he'd be playing Sublime early No Doubt and things like that. And then all of a sudden, he left. And then we turn around and he's doing that stuff with MIA and writing songs for Justin Bieber now. And I guess working with Madonna.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
What he does live is absolutely phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not... I mean, he's there doing sounds, and he's got, like, three other DJs also doing the same thing, and he takes it, and he mixes all of that together.
Yeah.
So he's like a conductor, and they're, like, the classical musicians. It's, like, the same kind of thing.
Yeah, and I know a lot of those guys get a lot of grief for, you know, like, playing a laptop or whatnot,
I couldn't even... process my brain couldn't even process how he was doing all that,
and that's, you know, coming from you, that's a huge compliment, just being able to you know, basically chart out an entire Madonna album overnight, whatever that story was.
Oh yeah, that's what happened. That's yeah. So I started teaching Guy Ritchie, and they were dating, and my roommate just happened to say one night, he goes, oh, I heard Madonna just put out a new album, and I looked at him, and this light bulb went off. And I looked at the clock. I mean, I live right by the Virgin Megastore, and mm-hmm. it was like 8:45. I hauled ass to the Virgin Megastore. I bought the music album, and I came home, and I learned the whole thing, and I wrote it out. And the next morning, I had a lesson with Guy, and I showed him, and he's like, how did you get this? Like,
like you did something wrong.
Like, yeah. I said, what came out last night, and I figured it out. He's like, you already figured out this whole album. I said, yeah. And then she had... you know, written a song for him, and it was A minor G D, mm-hmm. which is so perfect for a new student. And so I was like, hey, learn this song, you can play it for her. And then he got her a guitar, and then I figured maybe she would take one lesson or something, but then she just, all of a sudden, I'm at her house 3 days a week teaching her for hours. Like, that's all she wanted to do.
That's
and then
crazy.
A month later, she was going on David Letterman. She asked me to come play with her, and I've been with her ever since.
Yeah, I watched that performance where you're talking about you didn't put on any makeup, so you look like a ghost.
Yeah, I know. They came in, they said, you want some makeup? I was like, no, I'm not going to wear a bunch of makeup on TV.
First time on TV, all my friends back
in Texas
are going to make
powder and stuff like that. I'm like, no, I'm not wearing any makeup. So I go out there, and there's so many lines. You can't see anything in front of you.
Yeah.
And it's freezing cold. I was a rabbit in the headlights.
Well, I mean, that's crazy to go from, you know, just teaching Guy and then teaching Madonna. And the next thing you know, she's calling you to do a Letterman. And then, you know, I mean, obviously I listened to a ton of stuff about you today. And then, you know, doing the stuff in Barcelona and just, you know, and from there on out, you know, the first show of the tour, you know, just walking out in front of an arena full of people out of nowhere. I mean, that's. The trajectory of your career just is insane.
Yeah, that wasn't even walking out. Just we were under the stage and you rise up.
Like
the same guy who did my lift was Gene Simmons' guy. So I'd always talk to him about Kiss stories.
Yeah,
Gene even came to a show.
Oh, wow.
And he was like, he was asking about the lifts and he was calculating the times. And he was a really smart guy. He's like, which lift is this? Is this the Pew Q37H? Oh, and I think that goes up at 36, you know, millispeeds or whatever. I don't know.
Wow. Yeah, he's sitting there trying to think, all right, if we did this at the intro of God of Thunder, it would take till the second
part. Right. No, that's how he thinks.
Well, let's get into that. You have two new albums out.
Yes.
And you've got the Between the Space, which is the heavy album, and then Better or Worse, which is kind of the more acoustic-y album. What was the antithesis behind putting out two albums on the same day, like two genres?
You know, there's people who like my acoustic stuff, there's people who like my heavy stuff, and this way you got something for everybody.
Yeah.
And you know, I started out playing acoustic on my own so I could recreate that anywhere, and then it just sort of came back around to playing with a band and playing heavy music again, because I felt like I'd done that with Prong, and I did an album with Fleming Rasmussen.
Nice.
And he was like, no, you need to be doing this heavy stuff. And then from doing a heavy album with him, I got signed to Metal Blade. And then after putting out another heavy album, Inverted Grasp of Balance is what it's called, then it's kind of like, well, you know, I've got all this heavy material. I've got this acoustic material. Sometimes I can only play acoustic.
Yeah.
And I asked Slagle, I said, could I, you know, what if I did two? And he's like, you have enough to do that? It's like, I've got more than enough. I could do three. I could do three albums. But he's like, yeah, sure, whatever. Whatever you want to do. So I did that. And then I figured two albums in the same day. Because people had said, well, why don't you put out one album now, one album later? And I feel like that's more confusing. I feel like it's confusing enough as it is, because what kind of artist are you? Are you doing heavy stuff? Are you doing acoustic stuff?
The only thing I saw that was confusing was when I went to Spotify and it shows you, like, at the very top, it'll show you, the newest album. But obviously you have two, so the newest album on Spotify was the acoustic one.
Well, because they're all color-coded.
Yeah.
So I want that to be the next color.
Nice. So how long were you sitting with Fleming until you asked about the bass on Injustice for All?
Oh, he always says, oh, because I was joking with Max, the guy who played bass on that, because he does a bass solo on the song Everything's Undone. And I said, you won't hear it anyway. And then Fleming was in the other room. He goes, I didn't mix that album.
I had done a record with Steve Thompson around 2000.
Oh, wow.
And Steve, he didn't even have one foot out of the cab when he showed up to the studio before. I was like, where's the bass on Justice for All? So
it doesn't bother me, actually, because I look at it artistically, like Cliff wasn't there.
Right.
So that's sort of the artistic side of that.
Yeah. And it
doesn't bother me.
It's funny.
And I love the sound of the drums and the guitars.
Oh, it's a great album. I love the way it sounds. But I was always taken aback watching the one video, and you see Jason and he's doing all these runs and scales and things like that. And you're like, I don't hear any of that, Jason. I don't know what you're doing.
I know, but I look at it like Cliff wasn't there,
yeah.
So it's sort of representative of that.
Right.
Maybe I'm the only person that thinks of it that way.
Well, I mean, I think they kind of said that, too. I think they
really
came out and said something along the lines of that was part of that, you know, where they were kind of hazing Jason and they were messing with him. And,
of course.
And so they were just kept. What was crazy, though, was the EP that came out before that, the Garage Days.
One of my favorite things ever.
Yeah.
I love that.
Metallica is the greatest cover band ever. But yeah, the Garage Days comes out. It's so bass heavy. It's, Crash Course Through Brain Surgery.
Yeah, the guitars are actually really low because that was one of my templates that I would listen to making Between the Space.
Nice.
I wanted Between the Space to sound like that. I wanted it to sound like Garage Days or when Anthrax did Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath, or when Pantera did The Badge.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted it to sound like an album made in a garage.
Very cool. Well, Monty, man,
and you know, one last thing about doing the acoustic stuff and the heavy stuff, like opening for Sebastian, like this is such a perfect, you know, like combination because he has heavy music and he does acoustic music. Yeah. He's a solo artist. He's got a killer band. But when I do, so we do, you know, we'll do a song off each of the heavy, you know, off each album, and then I'll do something acoustic. And it goes over so well. Like last night in Nashville, I feel like the acoustic track went over better than anything else. And it brings the crowd down. It kind of brings the dynamics down for us to just knock it out of the park at the end.
Yeah.
John does a drum solo. Eli does a bass solo.
Nice. Cliff Burton has a bass solo.
Well, that's a little much.
Hang on. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
I'm a Cliff Amal shirt.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah. I'm all got the Pantera tattoo, got the Cliff thing.
Are you coming tonight?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
We're going to go grab some food and then come back to the, come back, check out the show.
All right.
But yeah, once again, Monty, man, thanks for taking the time. Thank you, Eli over there, and John, thanks for taking all the time tonight and,
yeah, man,
and coming
thanks,
on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. And just real quick, you know, what's the best way for people to follow you and find the latest albums?
Well, you can always go to montypittman.com, and you can find everything there. You can go to metalbladerecords.com/montypittman. You can follow me at Monty Pittman anywhere, you know, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. John is John Dette, J-O-N-D-E-T-T-E. Eli is Alien Satan. That's his other band. He's got his own solo band also, which he didn't tell you about, so I will.
Thanks, buddy.
But Eli Santana, John Dette, Monty Pittman, just look us all up. You'll find us. Hopefully, if we're hard to find, then we're not doing our jobs.
Or you're not doing it very... You don't know Google.
Yeah.
Well, cool, guys. Thanks, man.
Yeah, you could just Google us and whatever.
I'm sure you know, it all
on Spotify, iTunes. You can get the physical CDs from Metal Blade or from my website. The physical CDs sound better. They really do.
Cool, man. Thanks.
Thanks. We'll be right back.
is Rob Flynn from Machine Head, and you're listening to Talk To Me. Thanks a lot for playing.
Huge thank you to Monty Pittman and the guys for sitting down with me in Louisville, Kentucky at their show, opening for Sebastian Bach. What a night. I'm getting to see Sebastian now twice. Now, if I could only see him with Skid Row. I know. It's probably not going to happen, but I would love for it to happen. So once again, huge thank you to those guys. Thank you to each and every one of you that check out the show each and every week. Make sure you are spreading the word, telling a friend, letting everyone know about the Talk To Me podcast. And so for the Talk To Me podcast, I am Joshua Toomey, and I will talk to you guys next Thursday.